What's up, Pop Peeps? It's your girl, Pop Mom, and you know it must be 420.
Hello.
Pop Son, is that you?
What's up?
All right. Well, we're going to get the show started. Before we get this next call on, I just want to let all my Pop Peeps know they are now tuned in to It Must Be 420 with their homegirl, Pop Mom 420. And as a guest this week, I have Pot Son on. This call was important because it's a two-part series. We are going to encourage you all to listen to the first part of this call. Just for some background text, if you've been following me on any of my platforms, you know about we're all dealing with social injustices and systemic racism and systematic racism within different institutions throughout the fabric of our whole country. And we've been grappling with the cannabis industry and the cannabis community and the violations that we've all been under within the community. But what came out last week was the injustice of customers in the cannabis community that are Black and brown.
Right.
So a lot of our Pot Peeps started reaching out on our platforms and sent out video of an African-American gentleman. We're going to call him Mr. John because we want to make sure we protect his identity. And we got footage of Planet 13 dispensary in Las Vegas, Nevada, their security staff tasing him as a customer. So what wound up happening, Pot Peeps, all of that information came through. Me and Pot Son had to verify some of this stuff. We had to find videos on YouTube. We did our due diligence of trying to find some of the security staff. We actually tracked down old co-workers that worked for Planet 13 that gave some testimony to the story. We also had another dispensary that called in with information on this story. So this story was thoroughly vetted. So we don't want anybody thinking we're just picking sides. This story was also almost a year ago. So we want to make sure that, you know, we give that context. So what we want to do is make sure I wanted to bring the podcast back. You and I had talked about bringing the podcast back. That way we can give our audience a way of just listening, because we know how social media can start to be when you're on live. It becomes like a boxing match. So I didn't want that for any guests approve of or agree with. I wanted them to be able to come onto our platform to be able to speak and be heard, because that's the most important thing we need to learn in this lifetime, is to listen to others. And I want to be listened to. So I gotta, you know, we gotta practice that ourselves with our platform. So we're just trying to use our platform to bring awareness. We want to make sure that we're sharing cannabis stories. And I thought it was important. You thought it was important actually to be on this call, because You are my son. You are African American, and although some of these things might not have personally happened to you the same way, you're wanting to know and understand what is it like to be in that position. So
you always look at it too, you know, from the perspective of, you know, of a Black male in this country. When you see it happen to someone else, you always put yourself in those shoes and you think like, damn, like what if that was me? So
exactly.
So it's definitely, you know, it's always relevant, you know.
Exactly. So what we're gonna do is get Mr. John on a phone, and while I'm speaking to you, I am pushing him in on Anchor. So thank God for Anchor that you can push multiple people in on a recording. So when he picks up, we'll make sure we acknowledge him. But you know, I sent you the last show. If our viewers go back and listen, they will find that Mr. John's significant other that was there with him that day, she was there, and we got her account as well. Oh, Mr. John, okay. I think we got him. Mr. John, are you there?
Hey. Good afternoon. How you guys doing?
We're good.
Hey, Mr. what's going on, man?
Just to let you know, yes. Pot Son is on the line. Pot Son, this is Mr. John. This is my actual son. We just gave our audience just a little brief taste of, you know, just reminding them of the context of this story. We reminded them, Mr. John, that we fully vetted this story before we put you and your family out there. We also wanted our Pot Peeps to know that we're calling you Mr. John because we want to make sure that we're protecting our guests, because we know social media is a mean bitch, because I see it happening to me and my son where we, you know, we get threats, but, you know, we understand we're equipped to deal with some of this stuff. So we wanted to make sure that we had a platform that was open where people could speak freely without, you know, the interruptions, the rudeness. And we want to be able to listen. That's half the damn problem. None of us are listening to people's stories. So I think it's important with the cannabis community. There's so much going on with just our world dealing with social injustices. And when we talk about this as African-Americans, about it being racism, being in the fabric of this country, that means in every job sector is in. And now we're realizing it's the cannabis community. I mean, shit, it's always been a cannabis community. Blacks have been getting arrested for cannabis forever. But what we also are seeing now is that extent of not only are the just regular African-Americans that work in there being treated a certain way, now we finding out goddamn customers like yourself who have spent a lot of goddamn money in Vegas buying weed, like some of us have, and being mistreated. So we wanted you to have a platform. My son thought it was important that he jumped on this call. So just shout out to you for caring enough, son, because he was like, Mom, I want to be on that phone call because I want to like feel this, you know. So we just want to give you a chance to take us back. Last week, I got a chance to speak to your significant other, Miss Mary, and she gave her account. And we wanted to hear that from a Black woman's point of view, with your baby in the car, because she had a story of her own. But I'm going to ask you the same question I asked her, the first question. Tell me what your day was like leading up to going to Planet 13. What was your day like? How did you wake up? How was your day?
My day was actually, I was okay. You know, we both had job interviews that day. You know, we was riding along together. We went out to eat. I took her to her job interview. And I was supposed to go to a job interview, but the manager that was supposed to be interviewing me had canceled and rescheduled it for the very next day. So, you know, once that happened, you know, I dropped her off at work, or I was going to drop her off at work, but she didn't want to go to work. So, or something happened to where, you know, she didn't go to work. And then we ended up stopping by Planet 13. On the way home.
So this was a normal day. This was like, it sounds like a
pretty normal day. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like a normal day. Like, you know, your girl come get you, your boo come get you. Sound like, you know, after your day, most of us, that if you live in a legal state, I know a lot of my pot peeps don't, but if you live in a legal state after work, it's like going to the bar. We all hit the dispensary, get our shit and go home to kind of chill. Am I saying that kind of right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, see, the issue was, you know, she, when I had my job interview, you know, the lady called me for my job interview. We had my son with us. Okay. So we didn't have no babysitter. So once we found out that I had the job interview, she called Dolph and, you know, was going to take
gotcha. Me
to the interview and stay in the car with my son. And that's how my son ended up staying in the car with us. But once, you know, she had already called off, the lady called me back and canceled and rescheduled me for the very next day. So we she was already off and we just said, we're going to go home. Yeah. So, you know, I stopped by Planet 13 because I had a pre-order and.
So this less, I'm going to slow you down because I want my pop peeps to understand when you say a pre-order, I just, because a lot of people don't live in a legal state. This means no different pop peeps. If you order off a goddamn, you know, one of those food things and you go and pick it up. We can do the same thing in a legal state. We place the order online. It gives us a time. And then you just kind of like park and you go inside of a dispensary and you go to the pickup line. So I'm just giving them some visual. So tell me you got to the door, you parked, and then you went to the door. Where were you?
Yeah, so I went to the door, walked in. There was about 6-7 people in line ahead of me. You know, different type of people. Obviously, people that was on vacation visiting. I'm in line, you know, I wait in line, I'm on my phone. As I get to the front, I notice nobody else being stopped about their ID or harassed or anything, but, you know, I give her my ID and or my driver's license, and she scans it. Then she looks at it. Then she looks at me and says, "This isn't you." And I looked at her and said, "Well, you know, what do you want me to verify? You know, how can I verify that this is me if it's not me on my driver's license?" So she ran down her protocol list of questions that was on my driver's license. I answered all of them fluently.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, she continued to look at my driver's license. So being that I had my social security on me, I was about to pull my social security card out. I got it pretty much out of my wallet. And when she finally seen that I was pulling out my social to verify, she was like, "Don't come at me like that." So, you know, I told her, you know, I was just, you know, verifying I am who I say I am. And, you know, you ain't got to come at me like that. So she give me my ID back or my driver's license back, and then gives me the ticket and tell me to proceed to go on to the next portion of the dispensary.
Now, just to give people more visual, yeah, when you come into Planet 13, there is, and most dispensaries, there is some type of receptionist desk that has to take your ID by state laws. They take your ID, they scan it into a system. Now, what's interesting about this story is, you know, because I was the staff trainer, I know that we can, we know if you've been in our store. So we know if you've been there, how many times you visit. This is all a part of scanning your ID. So having your social security card actually does is a backup ID. Kind of rude that she didn't take it fully, but the mere fact that she gave you the ticket, she gave you the ticket. This ticket is like getting inside of Disney. It's the only goddamn way you can get into that weed side. So she gave the ticket. So she must have had some type of clearance in her mind to say, okay, I know this seems a little, but, you know, he is who he is, because she wouldn't have gave you the ticket. So the ticket is the legitimacy that you are able to enter to into getting your stuff. So let's,
right,
let's go.
Wait, real quick, though. So there is like Miami, all these different places where you need an ID to get into a lot of these clubs and dispensaries, these different places like this. What makes someone say that, you know, that doesn't look like you? So, like, if someone says, like, "Hey, I don't believe this is you," what is, like, the explanation that they immediately give you? Like, does it not look like you on a license? Is it, like, what is it?
And it could be, because I've had that done before, and I'm going to let Mr. John answer, but I have that problem all the time, Mr. John. If anybody follows me on any of my social media platform, I constantly change my hair. So people always have to do a double look. I actually carry a military ID as backup, because my son will tell you, we've lived in different states. I've had blonde, long hair, permed hair. So I have had issues with ID, but I almost feel like he does. I always keep like a third backup, like a social security card, for that reason, because who the hell would carry a social security card if, you know what I'm saying? So I know that to be true. It's almost like living black. I know people look at my ID and like, that don't look like you. And I have that issue all the time. So people can say, because you changed your hair color, well, that's not the same. So having your social security card is one of those things that's like, is undisputable. You can take that in a DMV.
Right.
Like, nobody would be right. Sitting and stole somebody's
social security card. Can't nobody dispute that damn social security number, man. That's like your identity.
Exactly. Like, who the hell want that extra problem? That's a federal crime, having somebody else's social security card. So I find it very, and Mr. John, just to let you know, I verified this story from other receptionists that were sitting there, and you are almost repeating the story exactly. They said that she looked at the ID. They said she was not sure it was you, but you said, "I have a social security card." You said something in your voice, because the person sitting next to her heard that, and they told me that. They was like, "Yeah, that was a dude who had an extra social security card or something." And she was like, you know, she was just like, "Go ahead." Like, that's what they said. So,
and not only that, you know, I was there, my cousin had came from Los Angeles, and we was there Sunday.
Okay.
So we had, you know, shopped there previously, but even before then, I had shopped there a couple more times. But, you know, I still had my ticket on me from in the car that day from Sunday. But, you know, so she proceeds to say, "Yeah, you know, go ahead." And as I go around the little receptionist desk, the security guard that was initially to my left, she walks around and meets me on the other end of the desk. So there's like a circular receptionist desk right there. So, you know, it's two ways you could go around it. You could either go around it left or right. I went around the right way because of where I was positioned in line. The security guard was on my left. I went around the right. She walks all the way around the desk and meets me. She then says, "You don't have to purchase your marijuana here." So In my mind, I'm like, okay, let me stop, because she was right there. She seen the whole dialogue. She was close enough to hear everything. She think I'm tripping. Let me stop tripping. So in my mind, maybe, you know what, they tripping. Let me just go back here, pick up my marijuana, and I'm going to be out. You know, let me stop.
Yeah.
In my mind. Even though I know I'm not tripping, let me still stop tripping.
Yeah. Let me check myself. That is, yeah, it's like, yeah, code as a black person. We got to double check ourselves to be like, oh, am I wrong? Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah,
maybe
it's I'm just, totally wrong. Just let me get up on out of here. And, you know, let me do what I got to do.
Yeah, let me get what I got to get, and let me get up out of here, because at this point, you know, she tripping. So I'm like, all right, I took it as, you know, option. Like, you know, you don't have to. Either you can or you don't, you know. And I'm a customer, so you guys at security owe me a duty of care. So, you know, I tell her, okay, and I walk around her, because that was me checking myself, because I know the security is tripping now. So I walks around her. She steps back in front of me and says the same thing. You don't have to buy your marijuana here. So now in my mind, I'm like, okay, I know I wasn't tripping, because I just walked around and kept moving. I ain't say nothing to the lady, but okay. And I kept moving. And she steps back in front of me, harassing me again. So at this time, I'm like, okay, well, you know what? Let me just get my stuff and go on. Let me just turn around. I'll take my money to another establishment, because obviously you guys are trying to refuse the right to serve me when I'm not even doing nothing. So I tell her that, and I turns around and I starts walking towards the door. I make it literally half foot in, half foot out the door. So the door is all the way open, half foot in, half foot out, walking out. And she says, hey, stop. And as she stops me, I hear, and like, before I turn around, I hear her say, I'm kicking them out.
Yeah.
And I turn around, and she's like, give me the ticket. So I toss her the ticket. I don't know, you know, at that time, I didn't know what they needed the ticket for.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that was one of the tactics to use to stop me, to keep me from leaving the premises or what, but, you know. To say that, you know, I was trespassing by not having a ticket or something.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But it was, but, you know, I just tossed the ticket to her.
Yeah.
It flipped in the air a couple times, fell on the floor, and I kept walking. I'm leaving out. I'm not erratic. I'm not talking. I'm not yelling.
You're walking. You're exiting.
I'm leaving on my own. I make it literally, or as I turn around, I see her tell him that, I see the black officer running from inside the back of the facility. So it had to been at least probably like anywhere between 150, 200 feet that he ran from the back of the facility all the way out to my car to confront me, maybe even more. I want to say probably like even 300 feet. So probably even more than that. But, you know, for the most part, I make it about 6 feet away from my car. My significant other and my child is in the car.
And we spoke with her. Now, what I want to ask you is, once you got to the door, because I talked to Miss Mary, we see the footage of, you know, we hear her jumping out. We can hear the shock. You know, it went viral, the video we posted. We asked her questions. So, you know, I won't repeat, you know, because we can listen to that. You were there. So we don't have to take the audience back, because they need to listen to her version of it. But what I want to know from you, once you hit that door, what happened with the first security guard, or how did they even get to the point to draw that fucking taser gun? With all due respect, and just like I explained to Miss Mary last week in her interview, my son and I, we come from law enforcement. I worked in law enforcement almost 10 years. I dedicated to corrections. My wife is currently military. So we understand law enforcement tactics and the conversation maybe that the public don't understand. So where we were baffled at, and son, you could speak for yourself, we were just trying to figure out, how do you get tased at a marijuana dispensary? Because my son and I do plenty of content around cannabis, and we go inside of these
and not only that, it's like, it's that, and then also upon him telling us, you know, Mr. John telling us the story, it's like, how does it go from leaving out the door, you know, I'm on my way out, to that, you know what I'm saying? Like how does it Yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
Like on the ground.
You feel me? Like how does it go from I'm taking my money out? Friends. Yeah, it goes from I'm taking my money and I'm going somewhere else to like how does
exactly.
Yeah.
So all right, so as I'm exiting now, before I even make it to the car, I get off their little platform where they have their little logo. And mm-hmm. I look to my left and I see an officer reaching for, like, you know, I don't know if he was reaching for a taser, reaching for a gun, but anytime they reaching for something, you know, they're trying to, you know, reach for something lethal, more than likely.
So you're in front of the red ball. Anybody that knows Planet 13, their red ball is in front of their doors. So when you're at that red ball, let me just make this very visual. The red ball is literally maybe 100 feet from the sidewalk where their private property stops. So you are literally 100 feet from the curb of the property where the end of the line is for their private property starts. And you somehow get tased.
So as I'm wow. walking off, I step on the concrete, you know, on the parking lot. I see one coming from the left, reaching for either a taser or a gun, either or. And then I see one coming from around the right, reaching for a taser or a gun. And I look at both of them, and I keep it walking. I keep it moving. Mm-hmm. So I figured in my mind, okay, they about to set up their little presence and tell me get off their property. And I ain't even doing nothing. But okay, whatever. I'm going to leave anyway because I was already doing that.
So, right.
I literally make it to my car and I hear, hey, stop. I stop. I stop. I look in the car. I see her and I see my son.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the first thing I thought about was, all right, we've been in this situation before where I dropped her mom off on like a mega bus like that or a Greyhound. And mm-hmm. she's handicapped. And when we dropped her off where it was close to the bus, she's handicapped. You know, we dropped her off right there. They didn't have no compassion. They made her walk all the way from the bus, get back in the car, then told us to drop her off all the way in the back of the station and make her walk all the way to the bus. We told her that, or told them that, you know, she would probably miss her bus because she only has about 5 minutes. She's not going to make it, you know. So we mm-hmm. had to put her back in the car and we drove off. As we drove off, there's a security guard that jumps in front of my car, you know, and I slam on the brakes because, you know, he's like, stop, stop, stop. You guys pulled up here and you wasn't supposed to pull up here. And, you know, we're the security up here and they was tripping. So, you know, from that point, I was just like, you know, he pulled the gun out on us and we was just sitting in the car, me, her, and her mom, like, what are you pulling the gun out? I even hop out the car because I didn't want him pointing the gun in the car with her and her mom. Or
yeah,
right.
And now he got the gun pointed on me and I'm yelling at him like, what the, you know, what's going on? Like, why are you pulling the gun out? We just trying to drop her off where the bus is. She's handicapped. Y'all tripping. So eventually, you know, he put his gun up and everything, and then we hop in the car and leave. So, you know, they try to tell me, oh, you got to get off the property. You got to, you 86 off the property just because I pulled up and dropped her supposedly off where the bus was.
Gotcha. So this was that traumatic experience that you're having in this moment.
Yeah, previously. So I'm sitting here, I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, trip. I was already wasn't tripping because I was already on my toes thinking about it, like, don't even trip. So yeah. You know, I turn around and this is all as I'm thinking all this is probably like 5 seconds, you know what I mean? I'm thinking about all this mm-hmm. at the same time. So I'm like, if I would have drove through that guy, you know, because he jumped in my car, then they would have had the right to shoot us, you know what I mean? And they wouldn't have my fault. So yeah. I'm not even about to chance it, you know, knowing that they just, you know, probably trying to set up a perimeter in the front of my car and try to block me. Like,
exactly. Block you.
I'm not even about to, you know, try all that. So it's like, you know, instead of doing that, I'm going to turn around, see what they want. So I turn around as I'm standing there, you know, he's walking up the other two security guards that I seen. And it, somewhere another security guard came out. It was like three already. The name of the officer, the security guy is Darnell Bumpus.
Okay.
And
I'm very familiar who that is. Yep.
He walks up. Obviously, you know, he was a former UFC fighter. Got, you know, I look at the record. He got beat up a couple times. He tried out for the police academy, deemed unfit, so he only could do security guard. And he works at, you know, a couple nightclubs or something like that, you know, Seven Seas and a couple, you know, Crazy Horses and all kind of other stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Found out information from the streets, obviously. You know, but at the end of the day, you know, he came out and he was pressing, you know, he came out like, what's up? Like, and I'm looking at him looking like, well, you know, them fighting words like, well, what's up? You know, and he like,
you
supposed to be leaving. I'm like, I'm already leaving. He like, no, you're trespassing. I'm like, I'm leaving. He like, you're trespassing. I'm like, I'm leaving. And he like steps all up in my face, like yells at me like, well, get up and go or get the fuck out of here and go then. Like, you know what I mean? Trying to be aggressively over aggressive for no reason.
Yeah.
So then I tell this guy, you know, you know, you're not my daddy. You're not finna talk to me and disrespect me. You know what I mean? And I'm a patron. You know what I mean? Like, you're not finna come at me sideways. Mm-hmm. Like, you know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
You know, you got all this backup here and everything. Like, if it wasn't this, it would be something different. So, you know, the other officer, white guy named Ronald Peterson or Ron Peterson, he then says, ain't nobody trying to disrespect you out here, man. Just go ahead and get in your car. I'm like, what y'all out here ganged up for? I was already leaving.
Yeah.
And y'all over here pressing me. Y'all came out here agitating me. Y'all came out here tripping with me. I'm already
right. I was already in the act of leaving. Yeah.
So what they were trying to do was stop me to tell me that I'm trespassing, but they never trespassed me because I didn't do anything that warranted to be trespassed.
Exactly. Right?
So, you know, I guess what they were trying to do is apprehend me and then trespass me to kick me
out of the property. Okay.
But the thing was, you know, when they was telling me to get in my car and go, that was their whole tactic to get me off guard. So as soon as, you know, we have this little dialogue and I turn around to get in my car because obviously, you know, it wasn't nothing else to be said. That's when they, you know, try to sucker punch me and, you know, they try to jump me. But, you know, as soon as I felt a hand grab me, I went into fight or flight mode. So, you know,
exactly.
I'm in self-defense mode at this time, you know. So me and Darnell is fighting and, you know, the other officers jump in and, you know, somehow I get swept off my foot and slammed to the ground and end up on my face. After about, you know, 15, 20 seconds of scuffling with both of the officers, I get slammed on the ground and slammed on my face. And, you know, from that point on, I'm face down on the ground and both of them is on top of me. So, you know, while both of them is on top of me, you know, Darnell is punching me a couple times. But the other officer, I'm kicking and trying to get him off of me from my lower half of my body. And I guess I kick him and he ends up, you know, getting off. And then, you know, he comes back. I guess he got mad and agitated and was like, oh, you want to play like this? You want to be like this? And he punches me in the nuts. He grabs my, you know, my,
scrotum and all that,
yanks
that
in. Then he pays down there in the scrotum and pretty close to it, but, you know, not exactly right there. And then, you know, Darnell is tasing me on the back. He tased me a couple times. At this time, he had his knee on my neck and he had his taser on my back and he tased me twice. The other officer had one of them tactical taser flashlights and he tased me on the buttocks and, you know, near the scrotum area, you know, with that taser. So he tased me, I want to say probably four times and Darnell tased me about twice. And then, you know, as she got out the car, that's when they start removing the knees from my neck. And then you see him on the video with his knee in my back now, taser on my neck.
Now, whatever position you was in as far as distance, according to Miss Mary, your significant other, your son And, you know, I had to have that Black woman kind of conversation with her where, you know, as Black women, we're just in our zone kind of thing. I didn't want her to feel bad. Sometimes it's our kids who alert us to things. And I think that's a part of the guilt as women we're feeling in all of this, because now we got to watch this. And she explained, you know, she said it was like a normal thing to her. You know, she said even when she saw security, she was just thinking, oh, John always know folks. He's friendly. He know a lot of people. She said she just didn't have any idea. She said even when you walked out, she didn't feel like something was wrong. She said she just thought like, oh, the security might just be talking with him because he know a lot of people in this town. He's friendly. He has friends in security. Some of his good friends are security. So she said she just went back on her phone, and it wasn't until your baby was like, what are they doing to my daddy? So I just want the audience, my pot peeps, to know that when this is happening, your car is not far away, that your son or your daughter didn't see this happening. Your child is the one who alerted and said, hey, what the heck is going on out there? So that is like, to me, it speaks volume that, like, damn, your child had to see that.
And he said it's no respect either on the other side. Like, for when a man with his family, like, you know what I mean?
Not at all. If a man is saying, I'm going to my car, it should have been, let me escort you to your car. That's security job, because I'm also here to tell you what security is supposed to do. I have never, and I have talked with the security team. Some of these people no longer work there. I have hunted some of them down. Not the names that you've mentioned, but some other names that were supervisors. And they said, actually, I heard that because of this situation that you had with Planet 13 security, after this incident, Planet 13 security decided to teach the security differently after that and said, let's not ever have that happen again, because they know they effing wrong. So just to let you know, security knows. They put in a training right after this happened because they knew they fucked up. They knew they fucked up, because I didn't even know that our security was walking around with tase guns. Then that they shouldn't even be having regular guns. This is a weed dispensary. Let's just make this very clear. If you come to Planet 13 to try to rob them, you're just dead. Nobody is plotting. Everybody know them goddamn owners up there got Confederate flags and shotguns. Don't nobody come in the weed dispensary. We haven't heard any weed dispensary since it's been legal that's just been robbed. So I can't understand why security is overly aggressive. I have witnessed myself. Vegas has so many parties, and son, you can account to this because you worked for one of the major hotels on a strip. And we see people belligerent. Wealthy white boys fucking belligerent. Screaming out Nazi shit. Ignorant shit. Grabbing bitches' asses. I've seen it all. And I've seen them walk them across the train tracks to make sure that they make it to the goddamn curb. It's unbelievable. So it's no way that security is trained to be aggressive. And I think you're the year and a half that I've been in Vegas and worked for that company at the time, I've never heard anyone being.
But that's a customer, though, so man. That's a customer, bro. That's like, you know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. I can't even imagine.
It's not some obnoxious. Yeah, it's not some obnoxious stuff going on. My man got an order already. Order, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's not. It's not even that type of vibe. Like,
you're a local.
When he tells me that story about the security guards and individually kind of like their reaction one by one, it just made me feel like they wanted to kind of do that already and was like waiting for some type of moment to just be like, hey, all right, now I can do this. Now I can use this taser. It's like, bro, what?
It's a setup. It's cameras in that place. It's enough cameras that you don't have to have an altercation.
You want to have altercation.
Or one person. And we see your body build. You're not the Rock. You ain't no huge dude where, you know what I mean? You just, like, you ain't Mike Tyson. You know what I'm saying? You ain't out there just blowing, you know, throwing blows to people. And I'm sure it was other people outside. Like, why even make a spectacle? They got Uber drivers pulling up. It's a lot of moving pieces to Planet 13. And that front area, for them to make a scene like that is just disgusting. Seriously. It really is. I'm sorry. I got really wrapped. I'm really sorry, Mr. John, and I totally cut. But it really is. It goes to our what we're talking about when we say Black Lives Matter, that y'all don't have to overextend your motherfucking power on us. We get it.
Right. Ain't nobody stupid. We ain't about to go and plant. You know what I mean? Like, we're not dumb. You ain't about to walk in here doing something crazy. We understand what's going on with security here. So it's like, so. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, come on, man.
Like, I just placed the order last week for Essence, and I'm not coming to Essence to start no goddamn trouble in COVID. I can't get my goddamn weed. I don't even want y'all talking to me, for real, for real. That's why I made a pickup, because I don't want the extra conversation from the bud tenders and the rest of them. Like, I ain't going to come in here. Like, I don't believe in my heart you came in here just to fuck with ID. Like, who does that when they place the order? It ain't like you a goddamn visitor.
And we gotta just speak on this. You know what I mean? We kind of go on a tangent, but we got to speak on it, because people are going to want to give opposing views and try to find every inch of why this something happened. And it's like, nah, you know what I mean? None of that.
It's nothing you could have did, Mr. John. Nothing. And I worked there. It's nothing. My son has been there. We have put that company on the map when it comes to YouTubing and filming. We've seen security. I know how security, and my son will tell you, if anybody ever disrespects him, he know I come from security. I've talked to the head of that security. I've talked with him. I've talked to him about other security not doing their jobs correctly when it comes to searching the staff. Half of them, you know, if you got a big booty, they want to pet, And when I see it, I calls it out. It's been many a times I had to go to head of security and say, that one right there, he not security worthy. Like, I watched him do a search. Like, he ain't doing it right. So this is the problem when y'all overexert power. And I mean, this is the cannabis industry. People don't want problems. Besides your visitors who are assholes, your locals don't want problems. They excited about weed. Y'all are folks, Mr. John, that stood in goddamn line to make Planet 13 $60 million. I'm sure if we checked your record over the last year, you done spent a good over $5,000, especially when you're spending $150.
Yeah, I usually go in anywhere I go and spend about $150, $200. I think the order is pretty close.
I know black people, y'all are very, we are very consistent with our weed. And we know what we want, whether it's our half ounce or the ounce of the deal. We spend an average ticket $100. I can't imagine being disrespected at all. Yeah.
So, you know, after you know, all that happened, you know, you guys seen the third person video, but you know, after all that happened, they hemmed me up, apprehended me, took me to the back, had me back there from seven to about 10.
Wait a minute, time out. So you get tased on the ground. Now you're placed in some type of handcuffs soft cuffs.
They were,
and you're
to the back of their facility. So that,
so you're still at Planet 13. So you're in the back where security is. I'm sure they put you in the back where security is. And what was the purpose of that?
To 86 me off the property, because they couldn't do it until the police got there to read me the 86, I guess, the trespassing to let. Yeah.
The trespassing laws. So you had to sit for 3 hours and wait for Las Vegas Metro to show up? Were you offered any water, counsel?
No.
Any food? Did anybody offer you and you said, hey, my kid is in the car? Because I can only imagine you saying, my girl, matter of fact, you ain't had to say nothing because we heard your girl. So they goddamn know that your woman was there with your child. Did anybody say, well, let me make sure your kid is okay, or let them know to go home and come back?
They tried to do that like 2.5 hours after about 9:30, because they figured, oh, the police haven't came yet, so they probably won't come for a while. The police weren't even actually doing nothing. They were just actually lounging and didn't realize how they didn't think the situation was serious, because I was already apprehended and in custody.
Well, let me explain this that I do know. In Las Vegas, or because it is private properties, police won't show up like that, because that's why you have private security that you pay for. It has to be, first of all, cannabis is still not legal, federally legal, so police and firemen do not want to come on that property. It's illegal substances on that property, so police do not want to come on that property. So that is insane that they had you waiting 3 hours, because if that was a real situation, the Metro Police don't have no problem driving around that goddamn city locking people up. So that just goes to show me that it's some bullshit behind this, and we want to make sure we get down to the bottom of this shit. Because holding you in the back like they a holding cell further makes no sense. They're not a holding cell. They're not police. They don't have police powers. Their job was to escort you off, take your name, which they already had from your ID, and say that you are no longer on their property. If you come and trespass, then we can call the police. But see, they played themselves and they try to set you up.
So,
and that's what
you know. They had me back there. They couldn't do anything with me. They had me handcuffed, sitting on my hands, on top of my hands, with the handcuffs attached to a bench. So, you know, of course, the whole time, you know, I'm, you know, mad because, you know, they over here said they put me in the back with the same officers that assaulted me. So now that I'm in the back, I'm watching, I'm looking directly at Darnell Bumpus talking to him, and I'm just calling him all types of bitches and, you know, pussies and all kind of stuff like that. Because, you know, I called him like a sellout. He was, you know, he was a cop out because, like, they was like, that was their way of trying to be like, oh, we got a black guy. This is our token. So it won't
be
racism. He can't say it's involved when even though you know when I went to my mental therapist, you know, he explained it clear and said, you know, just because they're black don't mean that they don't have the same views or they're not racist.
The brotherhood, it's a brotherhood, man.
Exactly. You can be against your own because we I
was just explaining this to my to them earlier, my brother, and I was just saying that, like, you think about, you know, security and police and all these different institutions, and you think of them from the standpoint of the law, and you think, okay, this is the law, and this is what it says they can do, this is their protocol, and boom, boom, boom. But they don't understand the part of it of, like, a lot of those institutions are, like, brotherhood. So it's like, you think it's, you think everything that they do is based off law and order and stuff like that, but it's not. It's about the times that they're in the bar drinking together, and they're, like, and they're brothers, and they've been each other's, it's that part. They go off of that, and it's like, that overrides was right, and it's to the point where you got someone black, and it's like they're in that brotherhood to the point where they don't even realize who they are in the world. You know what I mean? It's just, absolutely. You know.
And what impact that they have at that moment? Not that Darnell had just a stake with Mr. John, but also you're not thinking about the future of his child sitting in the car, and that woman sitting in the car watching this. So that's why what all of us do matter. In these positions, all of us, and especially black and brown, when we know we've been oppressed.
Yeah, I was going to think about it too. Is just like when you black and in that position, it's like you're supposed to be. I'm not saying you're supposed to, but you would think someone in that position would look at him and be like, "Damn, what if that was my cousin?" Or "Damn, what if that was my son or my nephew?"
Yep.
Or, you know,
it's the empathy piece. It's the empathy piece. It's the piece. And Mr. John, just to let you know, I've been in a situation, my son know, where I had to leave the prisons because I could no longer buy into a system. You know, when my son was 5 years old, I left the prison because I told him, I said, I could no longer sit and watch recidivism of my own people come back and forth. And I had to realize I was a part of the problem because I was getting a paycheck for sitting there babysitting. And I had to make a big call and look at myself. And I said, damn, what about when my son comes through there? And I had to think about that when he's, which would be 24 this year, son. That was when he was 5 years old. I had to quit and say, I can't do this because one day my son is going to come through these fucking doors. And most people don't put themselves in that position. We too busy thinking, oh, that ain't going to be my child. That's somebody else's. But what we asking is for our white people, our white counterparts, to say,
right,
hey, walk a mile in our motherfucking shoes. See, but if we don't walk a mile in our own shoes, we can't tell them that. So I had to take my own lessons and say, no, I'm not going to be in here watching my own people because I'm a part of the fucking problem. And you got to wake up and say that. Like, you know, I get it. We all want to get into these different institutions, make a difference, but you got to ask yourself, are you really making a difference? I had to ask myself in cannabis. I worked for Planet 13, but I had my son to tell you, I had to ask myself when I got threatened at Planet 13 by the executives, I made a decision. I said, fuck y'all. I'm standing with the weed, the people. If the people don't fucking like what's going on, I'd rather have street cred than to have corporate cred. My son, no, I will say, fuck y'all. I will dump your stock and I will stand with people. I stand on the side of people. And when injustices are happening, man, that could be any of us. So I feel that. I don't get to pull out my card and say, hold up, before you whip my ass, my wife is the such and such in the military. You don't get that. My son don't get that. He don't get to pull out a card and say, hey, my mom's cop. His ass get whipped. Right. So we got to understand that. So I'm sorry. I know I got
good.
So like, oh,
But, you know, they had me back there, you know, then the police came. The police asked me questions, even though I'm handcuffed. They're like, okay, what did you do wrong? I'm like, what did I do? I'm like, why don't y'all go look at the footage that they got and tell me if I did anything wrong? So, you know, they went to look at the footage. Then, you know, they came back. It was asking me my first and last name. And they tried to ask me my social. I told them I wasn't giving my social, you know. And they said, one of the officers was trying to be an asshole. It was like, if she asked for your social, you give her your social. I was like, for what? I don't have to give her my social. She could look it up by my driver's license. My social. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's not law. You know what I mean? And then one of the three officers, you know, grabbed him and was like, just relax, just chill out, you know. And then I gave him my driver's license number. And obviously, he was mad because he was wrong. Mm-hmm. Couldn't be a dick to me. So
his ego was hurt.
Yeah. So, you know, at his this ego, point in time, he didn't say nothing else to me during the, you know, the questioning. The lady was, you know, pretty fair, you know, and the other guy was like, well, you know, they called us and, you know, he was like, we didn't have to come out because they already did our job. Well, might as well get you a lawyer, you know, like just go to the hospital, get you a lawyer.
Wow.
Like after they ran it because they tried to do a criminal. They tried to get me for anything. Okay. Are you a criminal? Do you have a past record? Have you ever been arrested? Are you on probation? Did you do anything? Like, anything?
Anything in your whole life, in your 30-something years of living.
And say you was the aggressor. You know what I mean? No, I didn't.
Yeah. Well, and I want to pause you and say something to that fact, because I don't want that to get skipped over, because I know a lot of people listening like, that's your personal opinion. And I'm gonna go ahead and stand up on this one. The people that I spoke with, the receptionist, the actual receptionist that took your ID, she wound up quitting Planet 13 because of you. And let me explain what happened. She wrote me and told me, she said the next day, the head of security, which his name is Rick, he came to her with an affidavit to sign and said, we need you to sign this. It's okay to say that he was aggressive. And she said, no, I'm not signing that, because he really didn't do anything. She said he really didn't do anything. You know, he had a social security. I gave him the ticket. You know, whatever, like even what you said, she didn't say that you did anything wrong. Even if you talking, she said you didn't do anything wrong, nothing different than any other customer or anything else. She said, I'm not signing it. He said, well, you know, we're going to need you to sign it. And it's okay to say he was aggressive, because we don't know if he was here to like rob us or anything. And she said, no, but it didn't stop there, Mr. John. Then she had the attorney, which his name is Lathan. He is also a part of their shareholder executive team. He also gave her the same affidavit and asked her to sign it. She said again, no. He then proceeded to give her his personal phone number and said, look, I'm going to give you some time to kind of think this over, but we're going to need you to sign this affidavit. And she said, Pop Mom, I felt so threatened and scared that was my last day and I quit. Isn't that something? And I have this all written. So when we need to reach out to attorneys, we have this information for you. And you probably didn't even know that this young lady left that job because she said the pressure that they gave her to sign off on you doing something, she refused. So I had to give her kudos, because she is the one who really tried to hunt this story down. So sometimes you don't know the impact you're making on people. Like, even if your encounter with her in the beginning wasn't the best, right, she still knew right. And that's amazing. Even in that, she reached out to me and said, hey, I know this guy. This was me. She put herself all the way out there on my social media. And she said, listen, I quit because of this situation. And I had no fucking idea. We had no idea. I didn't even know that this young lady wasn't even there no more. I was like, yo, that's why you left? We had no idea. She said that was the reason why. She said she didn't want to tell anybody, but she felt so threatened by management. Rick and security, head of security, and the lawyer attacked her. And she said she felt so scared that she was like, fuck it, I'm quitting. She said, because I'm not going to sign off on that man. And he didn't do any of the stuff that she said that was written on that fucking affidavit. Ain't that something? So you got people out here that know your story is true. And just to back it up further, because I'm one of them kind of people, I don't stop until I get to the bottom of shit. Another person called me, another young man from another dispensary nearby, that I have no idea he just a fan and came on and saw that video and said, hey, we know this story. He came to our dispensary and said it, but he said when he was saying it, it just didn't feel it almost sounded like you were in shock repeating the story to them, and the budtenders, they said they was in shock listening to it because they had never heard anything like that. They was like, why would they do that? Like, they kept just asking why. But after he talked with me, he was like, yo, I feel so messed up about this because the man was telling us that this just happened to him. And we were still like in shock, like, no, maybe it ain't happened like that. Or maybe it wasn't that bad. You know, just anything we can do to make ourselves feel comfortable. But I appreciated those people coming out when I released that video because they were able to say, yo, we can see where, you know, I'm listening to the story. It didn't catch on. And visually seeing it, it shocked a lot of fucking people, yo. It really did. Because none of us have witnessed anything like that at Planet 13. I've never seen anybody get tased. I've never seen that. So for another dispensary to come out, for staff that is no longer there and been gone from that job to come out, it just goes to there's still some humanity around. It really is. And that's what made us, my son and I, pursue the story more. Because it was just like, wait a minute, this ain't just no schmuck that they just tased. Like, we found your video and we was like, okay, you didn't get all the play on YouTube because we knew you didn't have the followers. But when we put it out, it was like people were calling us like, yo, I know this story. I remember this story. I know exactly who this is. And that's what allowed us to just find you. Because I know people were reaching out to you like, hey, Pop Mom is looking for you. Because when we got those accounts from them other folks, I was like, holy shit, this guy has fucking been done wrong. Like, you really got a lawsuit on your hand. And it's our job to report these stories in cannabis. Because you spent your money to build the cannabis industry off the backs of folks like yourself, like my son. And we need to make sure we're honoring your stories. And as a woman, I feel honored that you would even share this. This is the most intimate story you can share with somebody. It's humiliating. It puts your family in exposure and open wounds back up. I understand you're in therapy, your family, your child. And we just want you to know that we believe you. And it's a whole lot of people out there that know this story is true. Planet 13 may not want to admit it, but that's what we're here for. We're here to let companies and put them on notice. We will no longer take their shit. We will no longer allow them to treat us a certain way without being told that they shitty and treating us that way. Because we got the right to spend our dollars the way we want. No one deserved the treatment that they gave you. I mean, that it sounded like you had a hell of a day. Like, you was like a 15-minute trip took you fucking 7 hours.
Pretty much, you know, it was just more of like, you know, a waste of time. Even after, you know, the police told me what they told me. When I did go to, I left there and went immediately to another dispensary, and they seen me bloodied and beat up. And they asked me what happened. Like you said, you know, they couldn't believe it because it was just right then and right after I had left here, you know. And they was like, what happened? Like, you always cool. Mm-hmm. Like, what happened? And I told them the situation, you know, and they was like, wow, like, you don't never come in here tripping. How you not even tripping right now? Like, you know, and, you know, you're beat up, you're bloody, you know. And
yeah, that's what I heard. And I heard that you needed something for the pain. And I know a lot of people are probably going to say that, like, why the hell would you go to another dispensary? God damn it, if you got tased and dealt with
it, it was already a long day. He's already going to get some shit. Like,
if you never need a medicinal,
right?
Picked
up and then went home, and you know, I called the ambulance because I was going to go to. I went to the Dignity Health, but they were saying that the wait time was like 4.5-5 hours. So they told me, you know, it's probably better if I just call the ambulance and just don't fall asleep for, you know, a couple hours.
Wow, because we saw the concussions on your head. We have pictures of the bruises on your head, your back, the tase marks. We have all of that information now. So we know you legitimately, that cut on your head is a concussion. It could have been a concussion. Yeah. Like, we for sure know that by you hitting that ground and that bruise, that open cut on your head. That's insane, too, that they didn't. I mean, I hope you sue the shit out of them. I really do. I really do. The mere fact that malpractice, that they wouldn't make sure that you were the fuck okay. That's the part that really is now boiling my skin, because you legitimately could have went home, Mr. John. Went
so
to sleep,
you know,
and not
it was up. It was, you know, it was humiliating, and then, you know, even after that, you know, going to try to file, you know, press charges against, you know, the officers, because it was private property. The police, like you said, they really couldn't do anything. But I felt like, you know, they was covering up the story in cahoots with them anyway because of their ties to the owners. So, you know, it's a whole mm-hmm. lot, you know. Like you said, they issued the hands-off policy, you know, using my name as an example, you know, on how to navigate situations. But, you know, I don't understand how they could use my name as an example when I was never the aggressor. I was leaving, you know what I mean? That hands-off policy really kind of didn't apply to me. But, you know, it's good that they're implementing the policy to de-escalate situations instead of re-escalating like previously, you know. So, I mean.
Exactly. So you haven't gotten a formal apology, no follow-up, none of that. I just want to make sure. Planet 13 has not followed up. Have not sent a letter
nothing.
Of apology.
They're hiding behind the cloak of, I guess, Dragon Masters security. But they, you know, that's who their security, you know, company, who they work for, you know, Planet 13. That's the name of the company that work under the umbrella of Planet 13. So for the most part, you know, I'm not sure if it's, you know, they're in cahoots and did some type of indemnity, but, you know, for whatever it is, if you got a private property, you're paying them dollars. Nobody else is, you know, providing that security. You're the owners of that facility. You're providing that.
But they're still not
right.
allowed to violate
right.
your rights, your human civil rights. And that's where they're failing at. And that's what we want to make sure with this podcast and, you know, just making sure that they held accountable. And to let you know, when we do release this information, there's going to be more stuff we're going to release. You're not the only one. Me as a staff, I have information to release on their threats that goes to the threats that they make to individuals, whether staff or customers. They also mm-hmm. have a pattern of just not supporting Blacks. So, you know, there's a lot of movement on making companies acknowledge that they're not taking care of minorities and making sure that we're accounted for. So we're going to call them out, because Planet 13 owns 5 brands within their company. They own Medizin, they own Trendy, they own Leaf and Vine, Ha Ha Gummies, and we've all put them motherfuckers in place. I know I have. But I tell my son, we will never be counted out of cannabis history. We will never be counted out. And neither will you. Your story will be the story that we now understand that, wow, they can actually do that to customers with private property, but now we want to have a conversation with their security firms. Who are you picking? Who are the head of these security firms that violate people's rights? Because all of y'all are connected. And going forward, as far as after this incident, tell me the place you know, I spoke to your significant other and we spoke very extensively on your therapy, especially with the baby and just the things our children pick up because of the information. How are you grappling with your mental health? And I know your physical body was beaten up and taken.
You know, my anxiety, you know, gets, you know, I get kind of angry, you know, not towards every security officer, but, you know, the ones that agitate you for no reason, you know, it makes my anxiety goes up and I get real angry, you know, like, why, you know what I mean? That's always the first question, like, why, you know what I mean? Like, what purpose, you know what I mean? Why are you doing this? But, you know, for the most part, you know, I've been trying to grapple with it, you know, especially, you know, seeing the remnants of reminder of the George Floyd and, you know, all the police brutality that's going on. And, you know, like you said, it's systematic, you know what I mean? It's systemic. So, you know, in any type of form of any type of enforcement or law enforcement or security enforcement, it's all, you know, the same kind of, you know, people, you know, feel like they get a bit of power, and then some people, yeah, you know, are good for the job, but then others abuse the job, you know. And, you know, it's the difference between, you know, mm-hmm, learning, you know, what's right and when to, you know what's wrong, you know what I mean? So, you know, some people think that just because they're mm-hmm doing their job is right, but, you know, you could be still doing your job and still be wrong. So, there.
That's right. You could still be going against humanity. I think that's the biggest thing we understand. We get there's some uniform laws and regulation, but, you know, sort of like my son, I tell him all the time, you know, what good am I if I walk past a homeless person and she thirsty and I don't get her a water? Some things just come down to some humane shit. We live in Vegas. It's fucking hot. And obviously, if she's standing there and she's asking you, I ask for a water, what are you like? Oh, no, I can't talk to the that's the attitude.
And to be honest,
see, I don't live in that world. If I walk past you and you, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that whole notion itself, though, is where we are right now. I think we're kind of in a stage of just questioning the root of it. You know what I mean? And being like, is it, yeah, you know, because if you have the ability to just infringe on people's rights or just, you know what I mean? Or just it's an aspect of like your profession where you're doing your job overrides every aspect of being a human or just like basic communication or just understanding. You know what I mean? So like in that regard, it's like, does it ever really, you know, what is the solution to that? You know, if they're taught that already, you know what I mean? That's like the policy. That's the protocol, so to speak. You know, everything's protocol. Like none of it is always, and it's like, yep, you know, when you talk protocol, it's like, most 99% of human life is gray area. Like most of it is gray area, you know? And it's like when you're trained to just everything has to be a protocol, that's when like you get stuck in this box of, oh, this is my job. This is what I think he's doing. It fits this category of this, you know? And that's when people start throwing words like he's aggressive or resistant and this and that. And that's, yep, you know, that comes with a protocol. And it's like, nah, dude, there's also gray area too. So where someone is trying to like talk to you, yep, and like they may not be hostile, you know? Someone may be in a situation where they may have started out hostile, whatever way that looks to you. And if the situation is de-escalating and going down, you have to be able as a human to evaluate that and be like, you know what? I know as a cop, you know, whoop-de-whoop-whoop, this is what the protocol is. But my man not even tripping right now. You know what I mean? You could naturally feel the energy of that, but you're not, yeah, taught that. You taught that, you know, it's the protocol, you know?
Yeah. It's a robotic system, and that's what people have gotten caught up in. And we need to understand we live in a world of artificial intelligence, and if they want RoboCops, they can put some machines on the street. If you are breathing and blood is pumping through your motherfucking heart and you function the way the rest of us function, then you better wake the fuck up. That's why the world is happening the way it is, because it's not Robo. If y'all want machines, they would do a better job. We'll put machines out there. Just a bunch of, like, what's that movie with Will Smith? The robot movie, I Am Robot. Y'all would do a much better job just putting mm-hmm a bunch of robots, because maybe we could train the robots not to pull their guns first. But now we done gave humans this thing in a uniform, and now that done went to their head. We in 2020. It can't be no way you can't identify that, damn, that's kind of fucked up. Well, if that was my child, like, all it takes is for you to say one second, damn, if that was my grandma, I wouldn't,
dude,
like,
it's,
nah,
it's...
that ain't right. I mean, it don't take nobody for you to be, you could have had that whole situation, Mr. John. They could have tased you, and then they could have pulled you up like a human, right? And said, okay, this happened, sit you down, let me get you some water. I know what we went through out there with some shit. Let me get you some water. Let me explain what's going on. That's treating you humane. I worked in a prison. When we lock people up,
but at the end of the day, though, it's
fucking feed them.
It's the role, you know what I mean? And that's how we play things in society, is roles. When people get to wear that uniform and they got that uniform on, it's, you're not whoever you actually are. It's like people conform to the role. So it's like when you got the uniform on and your buddy's over here doing this, you adapt to that role. And it's like, you feel like, oh, I have to perform these actions because I got this uniform,
like,
on.
You know, it's also like this. It makes sense. Like, you know, if you hang around five broke people, you're going to be the sixth one. You know.
Of course. Right. You are who you hang around.
It all falls into training. And, you know, like you said earlier, it goes back to, you know, that brotherhood. You know what I mean? You know, with that being said, I mean, you know, the whole time back there, like, I'm not even going to lie, like, it. And another thing they do is, like, they try to make you feel like you actually caused the problem. They try to convince you that you caused the problem.
Yeah.
First off, I'm not mentally ill and I'm crazy. So if you want me to admit to me causing a problem when I mentally know that I have not caused no problem, then you're crazy. You know, it's not right. You know what I mean? They always try to put you in this category. That's why even on the video, he was like, show me your hands, show me your hands. But you got both your hands on the table.
You got, exactly. And you said that, like, how am I going to give you it's my hands sense, all on top you know, of me?
And then just the irony, just, oh, as soon as I have to happen to say something, if I wouldn't have said nothing, they probably would have been like, oh, he's trying to reach for a gun. Let me shoot him.
Exactly. And yeah. We clearly saw that you had on shorts just to let the pot peeps know.
I had jeans had on shorts, and so a wife beater, and I'm 135 pounds. I'm not, you know, like you said, Mike Tyson or anything like that. You know, their combined weight had to have been over 600, 700 pounds. No. So even with the, you know, military style gear and everything. Mm-hmm. So.
Yep. Boots, all the combat, the jackets, all of it. Yep. You know, this story is so, you know, I don't want to, it doesn't end here. What I want to make sure I'm clear with Pot Peeps as they hear the story, I want them to be able to digest it, number one. And I want to have some actions behind it. So my whole purpose for releasing this is so we can all be transparent. My job, my son's job, when we took on doing content and cannabis, we had no idea it was going to take us this way. We thought we was going to go on to YouTube, smoke weed, and laugh every fucking day. And we realized our life is changing, that we have a responsibility. A lot of entertainers don't want to pick up that responsibility. But I told my son, we're no good. If I can't do it with 2,000 people on Instagram, God ain't going to never give me 2 million.
And you know what? I want to say first and foremost, if I haven't told you already, I appreciate you guys. I appreciate everything you guys are doing. And if there's anything I could do to support the movement or the cause, please, please let me know. So, you know, if you guys need anything, just shoot me a ring, just shoot me a call down to support the movement for you guys. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we definitely are going to have you on future panels, because what I want to do is I've been in contact with a lot of other actually it's this black doctor who does a lot of stuff with cannabis and mental health. So we're working on bringing a lot of different people to the platform, having you a part of a round discussion, because we don't want nobody to ever do that shit at dispensary. And if I could bring you on board to have that conversation, I want to keep you family now. Like I told your significant other, y'all family, y'all are part of our family. We ain't gonna never forget you, because we're getting that spotlight now. You know, I just had a chance over the weekend to speak to the Reno newspaper about what the governor is doing with possession and changing the laws. And, you know, somebody gave out my name, like, yo, you want to talk to the chick pop mom? Because yeah, I got a lot to say. You know, people don't know your background. They don't know where you come from until you open your mouth. And that was one thing Planet 13 fucked up on. They never knew who I was. See, they had no idea. They thought I was just another little black girl that came through. They had no idea I was an investor. My family invested. My sons are invested. We create. They had no idea. And we wanted it like that, because we wanted to be treated fairly from the door. You know, we've never disrespected the company, any filming we ever did with them. We never put their bud tenders on camera, because we understood exposing them and not paying them is not fair to them. So we won over dispensaries just with our share going in the door saying, hi, my name is Pop Mom, and I would love to give y'all a feature on my platform. So I feel very entitled to make sure that the very company that I built up, when they wrong, I'm going to tear them the fuck down, because there's no way. And my son know I mean it. I really do mean it. My son has seen me do some shit in life that's like, how does my mom do shit like this? Because I become like, because I'm that person. If I give you myself, I give you all myself. If I work for a company, I used to sell Gucci for Nordstrom. I had high celebrity clients. They know I come to work every day. But if I fuck up, I done fucked up at Nordstrom and they had to let me go. Guess what I did? I had to stand to my peers and the people that I was supervising, say, y'all, I fucked up. I wasn't supposed to make that return on the company. That was my fucking return. And I was trying to be slick. But you're a better person for standing up. My son will tell you I have millionaire friends that are my friends just because I will stand up and say that. Like, if I fuck up, even my own child, I tell you, I wasn't a great parent all this way. And I tell him, yo, your mom's a fucking idiot sometimes. You know, we all got to be in that place where we can identify. And I can't take companies taking my $60 million and not identifying you did Mr. John and Miss Mary wrong. Let's talk about this shit. Let's make sure that the community know that this will never happen to anyone else. And that's what I want them to do. So a lot of people are going to say, what Absolutely. Do you want out of them? I want them to come out their fucking offices and have a conversation with us. I want them to atone. I want to have them on a podcast, have you on there, and have you ask whatever question you want to ask, because you need that clearance. You do. They owe you that. So I'm just going to make them accountable. And they can keep ignoring me, but I ain't going nowhere until I'm dead, at least. I'm okay with that. So I will make sure that I start getting answers. And if I can't get it out of them, I'll keep calling until I get answers from someone. But they need to speak of this. You know, we need to really talk about this. Employees need to know who they work for. You know, when they hear a customer story, realize that's your story. If they're taking,
they
got to
pay you. The customer's got
to
pay them.
To the staff. Exactly. So that is just like the worst way to see all of this. Is like, damn, if they tasing a goddamn customer who paid to come in, they don't give a shit about nobody. So that's what this story is capturing. Yeah. Like, yo, the blatant disrespect of a human life that's paying to come the fuck in here. Like, you could have took your services to any other dispensary. The mere fact that you parked, that's how we supposed to treat you. You park your car, I tell my staff, you treat that person with respect. It's so sad, Mr. John. I have told staff, a staff have asked me before, what if a customer spit on you? And you know my response is, you still can't do shit. You still can't do shit. I'm not going to never tell the staff member to smack the shit out of the customer.
Right.
Is the customer fucking wrong? Hell yeah, but we got private security for shit like that. But you still cannot strike a customer. It looks a certain way. You came in here to accept some bullshit, just like the cops did. When you put on that motherfucking uniform, you didn't. Right. Nobody told you going to have a sunshine day. You put on a uniform because your job is difficult. Working in them dispensaries is butt tender. You're going to deal with people that's belligerent. You got to be ready for that shit. Now, I'm not saying the person pulls a spit on you, but I'm also telling you from this position, you cannot just strike the customer in the middle of the store unless you want to be fired. Now, if you cool with being fired, smack the shit out of them if that's what you want. But if you want to be professional, you're going to have to figure that shit out. You're going to have to already know what kind of customer you're dealing with when they approach you. If they drunk and they spitting, I used to tell them, sir, before you even come over here, I need you to, you got to speak loudly. You got to do certain things for people you see already being belligerent. They don't just come up on you and just fuck shit up. They usually show you that shit from the door. So there's nothing you could have done that was wrong. Planet 13 owes a lot of answers to a lot of people, including you, your spouse, and your child. If it's nothing but an apology, I have a thing where I say justice can start with just an apology right now, because we really, as Black people, don't know what fucking justice look like. I don't know what it looked like, but I know if y'all started fucking saying, you know what, I did that, and I'm fucking sorry for that shit. That's not right. Now that I look back on that shit, that's, yo, we handled that shit all wrong. Let's call that guy in and tell him, yo, Mr. John, you know, we started training our staff differently after your situation because we reviewed the tape and realized that was not the right way to handle your shit. I really believe you could have accepted their apology. I really feel that way. Like, I really feel like you would have been like, all right, the shit wasn't cool, but I dig that y'all trying to do something better. At least you can give them that little fucking bit. But when y'all say nothing, being silent is being complacent. So I call it like I see it. They being fucking complacent because they know this story is out there, because I done tagged the shit out of them. I'm going to keep tagging them. So I just want you to know, and my pot peeps to know, we want to make sure that y'all hear all issues. It's great to just smoke weed and make moon rocks, but when real shit is going on in real life, I want to make sure that my son and I are tackling that content as well. And these are the perfect platforms to do that on a podcast. And if you ain't having real conversations in 2020, you ain't doing shit. So I feel honored that you would share the story with us. I just want to make sure we do our due diligence to be there for you, because you are a voice that is not getting heard. You tried, but we see you. We see you, and we're going to make sure that we get something out of this. So make sure you keep our number in your Rolodex. Make sure that you keep us abreast, and we're going to keep you abreast. We'll try to plot another show when we do get some answers. But I want to make sure when I bring you back that I can have somebody from that company that can answer questions. I don't care if it's an old security guard or what, but I need you to be able to ask them questions, because that's the only way it's going to settle somewhat. And we need this to settle so your baby can settle, your girl, your community, we can settle. So we need this to happen for you. So we just want to make sure you get justice. That's our point. You know, we done held you up. This conversation is long as hell. We We had to hear this one. We had to just stop everything we was doing. My son was like, yo, we got it, mom. You got to get him on it. I'm like, I know. So we proud of you. We honor you, and we know who you are. You know, we did our due diligence to find out who you was, and everybody that I spoke to that mentioned you, rather from another dispensary, like, yo, that dude is cool as hell. He always come through and, you know, get his shit, laugh, and bust it up. So we've heard people in the cannabis community that you visit certain shops say who you was. They told me straight off the back. They was like, this dude is not that dude, yo. Like, he is straight cool dude. Stop by, get his shit, laugh it up. Like, I holler at y'all next week, 2 weeks. That's the kind of dude that the cannabis butt tender said you were. That's what they told me. They said you have never been a problem. They just couldn't understand it. So you need to know that the cannabis community believes you, and they had your back. That's what made this story that much more impactful, is those people calling in. And the young lady that called, and she doesn't even work there anymore. That shocked the hell out of me. She was just like, this was the reason why I left.
Absolutely. So we want to make sure we exploit this story. And I appreciate the cannabis community showing me the love and support that they've been showing me so far. And, you know, it's just the beginning. You know what I mean? So I just want to say thank you to you guys. And, you know, like I said before, yeah, if there's anything that you guys need from me, just let me know. For sure.
Okay, we're going to end this call with you, and I'm just letting my pot peeps know. Make sure y'all check out the first part of this audio that we did last week, just so you can get context, and make sure you follow me on all my platforms, just so you can get the background of the story. So, pot peeps, it's your girl, Pop Mom 420, and you know it must be 420. Until next week, we appreciate you guys. See you.